Hey everyone, it's Randy Holsey here with Backstage Pass Radio. I hope that everyone's week is going well. Today I am joined by a powerhouse of a vocalist. She's making waves on the Nashville scene and leaving her audiences in awe of her vocal abilities. My guest this evening made a splash on season 16 of NBC's hit show The Voice. When we come back, we'll see what's happening with Presley Tennant, so stick around.
This is Backstage Pass Radio, the podcast that's designed for the music junkie with a thirst for musical knowledge. Hi, this is Adam Gordon, and I want to thank you all for joining us today. Make sure you like, subscribe, and turn alerts on for this and all upcoming podcasts. And now, here's your host of Backstage Pass Radio, Randy Holsey.
Hi, Presley. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad that we got the chance to jump in and chat. This has kind of been in the making for a little bit now, and I guess we both have busy schedules, but here we are, right? So glad you're here with me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. And how's life in California these days?
It's been nice. It's been good. I actually just got back yesterday from Arizona. I was out there for a little vacation after I feel like I came back from Nashville, flew back like one night, and then the next morning I was driving up to Arizona. I was like, great, this is vacation time now. So, but I'm finally back, ready to get back into the swing of things.
I think I saw maybe a post or something there at Lake Havasu. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So you grew up in, I guess that would be, Norco would be Southern California, correct? And I guess to be exact, that's a little town that is probably just a little south of San Bernardino. Is my geography kind of correct there?
I think so. I think if my geography is correct.
Well,
we're east of LA.
Okay.
Like, same in the same area. I'm about like 20 minutes away from San Bernardino.
Okay. Well, we won't get into a geography lesson here for sure.
Yeah.
I guess
for a couple of years ago, it's not my forte.
I get it. No, I really get it. So I've done shows with guests like from Murphy, North Carolina, and of course, everybody in the mind's eye, you think of the map, and you're like, oh, I know exactly where North Carolina is. But when you say Murphy, like, I'll bet you money you don't even know where Murphy, North Carolina. Exactly. So I like to try to put this in the mind's eye, this vision on the map. So people that say, Norco, well, I've heard of San Bernardino, I've heard of LA, I've heard of San Francisco, but Norco, where's Norco in California, right? Oh, yeah. So I try to paint this picture. But aside the geography lesson, what kept you busy, like as a young girl growing up, Southern California, what were you doing? What were your interests? What were the hobbies? Talk to the listeners a little bit about that.
I mean, I grew up doing a little bit of everything. I was very much an adrenaline junkie. I feel like in California, I'm very spoiled with the fact that I have everything, like for the beach, the desert, the lake, the mountains. So I did a little bit of everything there. I was always either at the beach or when it was wintertime, I would always be in the desert. You know, like I have a quad, and so I grew up riding. So I'm always out there in Glamis, or I am like in the mountains snowboarding. It's just like one of those things that I always really loved. And besides like all the fun stuff, I guess it was mainly just school and music. I grew up playing soccer and then kind of made the switch to music after I kind of was really introduced to the whole music industry and just fell in love with it. And I got to the point where I needed to make the choice because I couldn't do both. I was already homeschooled and I was going to rehearsals from like 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. and then straight to soccer practice. So I was like, you know, I should probably just choose one or the other. I can't really show up with a full face of makeup to soccer practice. I'm going to get a lot of crap from all the girls.
Right.
And they're going to be like, why do you have curls in your hair and like a crown on your head?
You're going to be that chick, right? Don't be that chick.
No,
yeah.
Right. I didn't care. I still am that chick. I will go anywhere with a full face of makeup on.
Right.
I look good, feel good.
That's right. That's right. Well, they always say, even if you go out on the soccer field and you suck, at least you'll look good, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you, when did you determine, like, you know, you were playing soccer, and when did you determine, okay, soccer's not it, it's music? Like, at what age did that whole music thing start to develop? Was this from a very young age, or was it from the teen years? Talk to me a little bit about that.
So I had always played soccer my entire life. And so I was very into that. I thought that's what I was going to do for the rest of my life. My family played. My dad was my soccer coach all growing up. And so when I started into music, it was just kind of more of like a fun thing, like little karaoke nights, so like Taco Tuesday, my parents would get some tacos, I'd be singing some Pat Benatar, that kind of thing. And so I did it just for fun, and I was doing a little like competition near my hometown and up in more toward Lake Elsinore, like we were talking about earlier, in Temecula. And I felt like I did pretty good. And so the mayor of Temecula reached out to me and introduced me to this girl group. And they really introduced me to the whole music industry. I had knew nothing that there was even this sort of world outside of sports even existed. And so when I first like got into it, like all these girls that I was in the group with were like professional dancers. Okay. I was like, I could do a somersault and it's not going to be good, but I can do it. Like it was that type of thing.
Sure. Yeah.
And so I was learning the entire time and I just fell in love with it. I was like, this is so much fun. I really enjoy being out here. I love being in the professional environment. And so, you know, I got into the girl group, and at that moment on, when I started to really perform and go to the studio, I think I was about 10 or 11 years old, where I was like, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is what I am meant to do, and this is where I'm the happiest. So I want to say around 12 is when I really, like, made the decision, like, no more soccer. I was already homeschooled, going to class, or doing my homework at home. Then I would go to rehearsals and then soccer practice. And so it got to a point where I was just like, I just need to choose one or the other. My dad was devastated, but I think he's a little bit happier now with the choice that I made.
Sure.
Yeah. But I would say I was fairly young, a little before my teens.
Would you consider yourself a good soccer player?
I would say I was pretty damn good.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If you can't toot your own horn, who's going to toot it for you? Right.
I mean, I was scouted for like, there was like this thing called ODP, and there was like a couple hundred players and probably like one person from, I would say like every couple of teams I got scouted to be like on like the Olympic developmental program. And so I got scouted for that. Didn't make it again, but I got scouted and I was like, hell yeah.
Yeah. Well, then you didn't suck. Yeah. You can't get scouted by that caliber and then suck at the same time, right?
Well, I also couldn't suck because, you know, I was the coach's daughter, so I knew I was going to get a bunch of BS.
Exactly. That's the worst when you're on a soccer team, your dad's the coach and you suck. That's the worst, right?
Well, then at that point, he wouldn't have played me. Like, right. If I wasn't good, he wasn't going to play me.
Be like, Presley, can you bring us some more water down here?
I'm like, here's your Gatorade, guys.
Exactly. Can I get you something to eat, too, while I'm down here? Exactly.
I went to the food shack and do some nachos.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I didn't think about this until you just brought up soccer. So I have an interview lined up with another artist. I think it's next Monday night out of Nashville. Her name is Sarah Faith, and she is also she was a collegiate soccer player. So it's interesting that I have two soccer players like back to back. Kind of funny how that worked out.
I mean, don't consider me one anymore.
Right. Yeah. Well,
a lot further than I did.
Yeah. So at the young age of 16, you auditioned for The Voice and you wound up on Kelly Clarkson's team, correct?
Correct.
Was it you that wanted to audition for the show, or did you have birdies in your ear that were chirping you up like, oh, you need to do this, you need to do this? Like, was this all your decision or was it others' decisions too?
I mean, it wasn't something at that time where I was like, I want to do The Voice. I wanted to be on TV. I was just, the opportunity had come about and I was invited to audition. And so I was kind of like in the middle of like, do I want to do it? Like, am I ready for it? And the previous years I had also been asked to do it, but I was either too young or I just didn't feel ready for it. And I was like, I'm going to be going against like people who are doing this professionally. Like, I was like, I feel like I need a little bit more under my belt.
Mm-hmm.
But I had friends who did the show and they absolutely loved their experience. So I automatically like knew like, okay, this is a possibility. But I guess I wasn't like jumping at to get at it. When I was 16, it was just kind of like when the opportunity arose, I was like, you know what? I feel ready. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm good for this. And sure, whatever happens, happens. I'm going to go in this with an open mindset and have fun and learn. And I think that was the biggest takeaway from that experience.
It's interesting that you say that, because I think most people would, and I'm assuming, I never tried out for The Voice. I'm too old for The Voice, but.
No, you aren't.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that offline. Anyway, and you're sweet, by the way. Actually, like, I think there's a mindset, you go and audition for The Voice. The Voice doesn't come looking for singers. And what you said just now, it sounded like they found you instead of you finding them. Can you speak to that a little bit? I won't put words in your mouth. You tell us the story, right?
It was more of just, I think, because I had friends who were on the show and they were just kind of looking around, obviously inviting people. They want to have people, like, the more the merrier, because they already do the cattle calls. Mm-hmm. But there also comes a certain point where it's like, how many cattle calls are they going to do? Because sitting there for like hours on end, I feel like when it's a little bit easier, just kind of like bring people in who are locally. But I don't know. I know a lot of people's experience were a lot different. The majority of everybody there was there for like the cattle call, which I thought was really cool, because I didn't know how the entire process worked of the show, but I know mine was a little bit different from everybody else's.
Okay. Well, and it's probably just that, because I had a guest on my show. It's been a little while. His name was Gabe Garcia. He's out of Lytle, Texas, and he lived in Nashville for a while. He was actually first runner up on the Nashville Star, which was kind of like The Voice, you know, back in the day. And I think that he said he was first runner up of over 60,000 singers. That's a cattle call, right? That's the truth. And I have to think, and I don't know if, I certainly don't think the Nashville Star was as big as certainly The Voice or American Idol. So I have to think that there's a lot more in the cattle call for, you know, The Voice and American Idol, for sure.
I just remember, I don't know what the actual number was for how many people auditioned. I know it was definitely high up, but I'm not sure exactly. But I remember when I was there, even, I mean, with The Voice, there's 48 slots. There's 12 people that go on a team. And so while I was there, I think it felt like there was a little over like 150 people that were there auditioning. And I was like, this is insane. Like, you're only going to get like a third of a chance to really even perform in front of the judges before the slots fill up. So it was definitely was interesting to be there.
Yeah. It's really interesting when I put it in perspective. I'm a local artist out of Cypress, Texas, which is northwest of Houston, for the geography lesson. And I play about 130 shows. Well, I was playing about 130 shows a year before the podcast started. That's in half now. But my point that I was going to make is I consider myself a good enough singer to go and perform professionally, right? But these shows have the most amazing singers. Like when I see them, I'm like, Jesus, they're on another planet. And even though you are an amazing singer, I bet you there was some intimidation even for somebody as good as you being up against that kind of talent, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I was there for like my blind audition, I wasn't nervous at all.
Okay.
For some reason, I was just like, I'm just going in doing my thing. And then I started to hear everybody else's like rehearsals, and I was like, oh, so this is what everybody sounds like. Because I was really skeptical, and I was like, don't listen to me. No one listen to me. No one gets to hear me rehearse. And I don't know why I was like that. I'm like, now I understand. I'm like, we're all good. We're all musicians. We're all friends. I was like, everyone's artistry is different. There's no fair way to compare another artist to another.
Yeah.
It's just not possible. No two artists are the same.
Nope.
But during that time, I was just like, oh my God, I'm so scared of like everybody. Like, and I remember, I think there was one girl who had the same audition song as me, and she told me that. And then I heard her voice, and I was like, why didn't they give her the song?
Right.
I was like, she would have won the entire thing. Like, I was so shocked. Yeah, but I definitely was intimidated. I'm not one to be very intimidated, but that definitely got me shaking in my boots a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it kind of puts it in, you know, perspective. I mean, you're not the only good singer on the planet. Like, that person's not the greatest soccer player. I mean, there's always somebody better, right? Is what I was always told growing up. My dad would always tell me that you're a good baseball player, you're a great hockey player, but there's always somebody better, you know, just keeping it real, right? Is what he always did. Now, you wound up on Team Clarkson. Mm-hmm. And you can completely plead the fifth on this question, but is that the team that you had hoped to be on, or did you desire another team and you wound up on Kelly's team?
So, I mean, Kelly for me was my first choice.
Okay.
But I also had like those moments where I was like, but do I want to be with Blake or Adam? Only because Blake, I feel like, was just a goofball. And like he can still like professionally like hear things and tell you what's up with it. Mm-hmm. And then Adam reminded me of my dad for some reason. And I was like, I feel like I could just have that bond. Like he's just going to tell me straight up the way, like no sugarcoating around anything. Mm-hmm. But Kelly was just always there, like at the top. It was just one of those things where, I mean, I grew up listening to her. She was my first concert ever. I used to sing her song Because of You at like every single little talent show thing near my house.
No kidding.
Or near my town. And so when I got to work with her, and also like when American Idol had like the PS2 game, like it was like sing Breakaway and you could see the judges' scores and see if you made it through and you got the golden ticket. It was like, it was always Breakaway. I would always sing that. And so I always really looked up to her, especially as like being a female powerhouse vocalist. That is something that I've always aspired and really inspired me. And so when I got to audition, it was just like that day I knew if I got a few chairs, like I knew I was just going to pick Kelly.
Yeah.
So.
How many chairs did you get? Because I didn't see the show. And now that you bring up chairs.
I was one of the later ones. So I filled up a little like more of like the teams. There wasn't many even options to choose from. Mm-hmm. So Kelly returned. So I was so thankful for that. Because I was like, oh, praise the heavens.
The stars have aligned, right?
Easy. So.
In general, what was the whole, you can kind of give us the cliff notes if you want, but what was the overall experience of The Voice like for you?
For me, The Voice was such an incredible experience. I mean, I was 16 at the time, and so I was still doing high school. I had to be, like, I had a set teacher and everything, so I'd wake up from, like, 7 to 12, sometimes earlier, and I'd do my schooling, and then I'd go to rehearsal, and then I'd go to wardrobe, and then I'd go to interviews, and then I'd come back, and then I would just, we'd have just jam sessions almost every single night. I mean, I went to a performing arts high school, but there was a lot of singers there, but not like professional musicians that I got to be around. And so it was so refreshing. And I don't know, it was just so nice to be there and make so many friends. And like, I know I can count on them for anything. Whenever I'm out like in their towns, I'm like, oh, I'm reaching out, we're hanging out, that type of thing. But as well as just working with so many incredible people, including like the staff and crew and the coaches and the musicians who played on the show, they were just, I was taking everything in. I felt like I was a sponge. And so for me to have that experience at a very young age and be like, oh my gosh, like I'm playing with some of the greatest musicians that are I feel like ever play for anybody. Sure. It was just so cool to be there. And I know a lot of people have different experiences. I'm very, very fortunate that mine was such a good one.
Yeah, that's great. I don't know what the duration was that you were, you know, from the time you went till the time you came back home and it was all over with. Mm-hmm. But could you see growth in yourself in that time period? Like from when you went in till the time you came out, could you see, man, I've grown so much, like I've learned so much. And you did say you were a sponge.
Yeah.
But I was just trying to understand, like, was it off the charts stuff that you learned from these people, or was it a little? Talk to me a little bit about that.
I mean, I will say that I went on the show as just a pop artist, and I came off the show as a country artist, or I guess a little right after the show. But that's because, you know, right before the show started, I was kind of in that limbo period where I was like, I feel like pop is not who I am. Like this music I'm making is not who I am. And I feel like I'm being persuaded to be something that I'm not. And there's nothing wrong with that for other people. But for myself, I remember being told right before the show, and it was like, you have to be okay with being someone off stage or on stage. And then when you're off stage, that's when you can have your normal life. But I was like, I look at country artists and they get to do both. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it might be a little more elevated, but they still are who they are truly inside, deep down.
Yeah.
It's just a little more out there, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so when I went on the show, I was kind of like already, I felt like in an identity crisis, and I was like, I'm 16. Why am I going through this right now? I'm not feeling this way. But I'm very grateful that I did feel that way, because if I was going through that now, I'd feel like I just should give up, because I'm like, my window of opportunity is like slowing down. Mm-hmm. But when I came off the show, I don't even say that. I would say during the show, I was in a coaching session with Kelly, and she was for my top 24 performance. And I remember saying, like, it was a Dolly Parton. It was a Miley Cyrus song, but it had kind of like a Dolly synth pop influence. It's Nothing Breaks Like a Heart. And if you heard it, it's like the, like, kind of gallopy super pop. And so she was like, okay, like, let's try to figure this out. She's like, you have to go home at the end of the day and look at yourself in the mirror and be okay with exactly who you are and what you're doing. She was like, you have to believe in yourself for everyone else to believe in you. So you might as well just be your most authentic self. Otherwise, you aren't going to be happy. And so I really took that to heart. And once the show ended, I just kind of took a little step back and just reevaluated and try to go back to like where my roots are and where I'm from. I mean, my town even is just so, so home-like, and everyone here is just like, we have horses everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, Norco is known as Horsetown, USA. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I feel like that's already like been instilled in me, like, I guess subliminally, because I didn't recognize it when I was younger. But when I look back at it, I'm like, this is like where I grew up in. This is where I'm from. And mm-hmm. so when I made that switch, it just felt so right and so natural. And I know I wouldn't have been there without The Voice.
Yeah.
I would have been continuing down the same path that I have been, and just trying to understand why I was feeling a certain way.
You kind of answered the question, but I was going to ask you if you really think that country is who you are, because I heard you mention Pat Benatar earlier, and I wondered if you were a rocker at heart, but doing the country thing, right? So, and I think you answered that, but would you say that you truly are a country singer at heart?
I would say, I mean, definitely more country than any of the others, but I definitely have some rock influences. I love me some 70s rock.
Yeah,
right. I love the grit and the soul and all of it. Mm-hmm. I feel like country for me is another way for me to put myself out there, like, just kind of, it's still a part of me, but with little influences everywhere else, with a little bit of rock, little soul, little pop. And there's no, I guess, necessarily like limitations with any of that.
Sure.
And it's just a very broad, generalized statement, but I feel like my style of country is not like the next style of country. But that I think that's what's really cool about it, in that you have like your traditional country and you have your pop country, and then you have all these different like little subgenres.
Yes.
But I take influences from it all to make my own little creation of music, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I've always said that I'm a rock pig, like from the day, like you mentioned the 70s, like 1978 was the most formidable year for me as a musician. That's what changed my life. And I'm in a duo, right? Myself and Chris Hughes, my lead guitarist. We do this duo thing here in South Texas. And over time, I was never a country guy. Like, I, you know, of course I've heard it, but I never followed it. I was the rock and roll guy. And I had to learn to enjoy the music and understand the music. And I have this love for it. I love the Americana genre now. There's so many great artists, and I find myself, you know, on this balance scale of justice. I feel like it tips more to that country side for some reason. It's kind of weird, and maybe it's an age thing. You know, they say that your taste buds change as you grow older, and lots of things change, and maybe the music taste changed too. There's nothing to me like good hard driving rock and roll. I still love that. I love it loud. But I have that country. I love that countryside as well. You don't have to love just one or the other, but you can take a little bit from all of them and kind of meld it into what you want it to be. 16 when you start, you know, got on the show. That's some would consider that a baby. Like, that's young, right? And I think to date, you're probably the youngest on my show. So talk to the listeners what it's like for a 16-year-old to leave home and go somewhere and partake in such a memorable event. Most people don't leave home until they're 18 or 19 years old to go do something crazy like that, right? But I'm assuming the parents went out there with you. Can you talk a little bit about that, like the whole leaving and who went with you and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So, I mean, during my stay on The Voice, it was myself, and because I was a minor, I had to have my parent with me, which I am so glad she was, because I don't think I could have had a roommate during that time, because everyone else got paired up with roommates, and I'm like so much of a homebody. I like my independence, and I like to have my alone time away from everybody, but I like to jump into everything. And so when she was there, it was just so, like, she had to come with me for everything, and I loved that, and it was very hands-on, but, like, I didn't get to see my dad or my family very often. But granted, it was only a short period of time, or I wouldn't say too short, but also not super long. I think it was a couple weeks where I was there, but the time went by so fast.
Oh, I bet.
And I felt like it was just like, oh, like 1 week is done. All right, two more weeks down. Oh, one more week. Oh, I'm done. I'm coming back home now. And I was like, I'm only like 40 minutes from home, because right, they filmed in like Burbank or Hollywood area. And so I was like, well, I'm literally right here. So it doesn't feel that much different, but like I couldn't necessarily see my dad because he was working all the time. And so it was a little difficult in that sense, but I was very lucky to have my mom there with me.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had no idea that you were in Burbank, so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like you were across the country or anything like that.
It was North Hollywood, so like right in between Burbank and Hollywood.
Yeah.
Right
there. So like 40 minutes away, I mean, but with California traffic, it was like 5 hours away, technically.
So like 3 minutes to go 3 miles. And I'm like,
exactly. Yeah. Welcome to Houston too. So post Voice, The Voice is over. What did The Voice do to launch the Presley Tennant after the show? How did The Voice help you?
I would say that The Voice honestly really opened up a lot of doors for me, not only for the fact of like just like performances and shows that I was invited to do, but it was a lot of like almost people took me more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that also could have just been an age thing. I can't figure out what it was, because I feel like when you're 16, everyone's like, oh, like it's going to fade away. Like she's going to grow out of it and she's going to realize blah, blah. And I'm like, nope, I'm still here doing it 4 years later, and I'm not planning on stopping anytime soon. But I would say, like, shows wise, that was a big thing. I was invited to play at a few different events called Boots in the Park. And so I got to open up for, I think just recently in my hometown, I opened up for Tim McGraw and Dustin Lynch. And then in San Diego, I opened up for Blake Shelton, Carly Pierce, Brett Young. Just so many incredible and influential names. And so I know from The Voice that probably wouldn't have happened, as well as it just, and I wouldn't even say that it's like all from The Voice, but The Voice gave me the platform for people to
absolutely
listen to me and to put my name out there.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't say it's like, like Presley Tennant from The Voice. Like, no, now it's just Presley Tennant who happened to be on The Voice, but now you know her because of that.
Right. But that springboard never hurts anybody, right? Like you're dynamic enough and good enough of a singer to certainly go out there and make your own way without The Voice, because you see people doing it all the time. However, it never hurts to have The Voice like launch you a little bit, right?
Yeah. Just give you
a little nudge. Absolutely. Right. At some point in time, your vocal style has been compared to, you know, some big names like Carrie Underwood, Whitney Houston. What's it like for a young performer, or probably any performer, didn't even have to be a young performer, but to be compared to those two names? Like, those are two of the biggest singers of our time, right? And to say, oh, Presley Tennant, to even say your name in the same sentence as those two people, like, what does that mean to you as an artist?
I mean, it's very humbling and very exciting to know that people see me that way. Because when you look at these people, you think of how respected and how much how much of a voice and a name they are, I feel like. And so for me to be compared to them is really, really cool. I don't know. It just is never something that I thought would have happened, because I feel like I'm like, oh, like I'm my own person. Like, and my own artist, like, I don't think it's like we sound alike, or, and it's not even that we sound alike, but for the fact of like, I can hang with them.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it does. It absolutely does.
I don't even know what the right word is, but it's just the most, like, the coolest feeling ever to know, like, people look at me as like in the same realm as them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess not like fame wise or anything like that, but sound wise, like knowing that I can be up there with them.
Yeah. So in your short tenured career, you've opened for some big names too. You mentioned some earlier. I wanted you to share a little bit with the listeners. You know, you mentioned Tim and you mentioned Blake. Are there others that you've opened up for that were bigger names? And of all of these people that you've mentioned, not that you've mentioned a lot, but of the people that you have mentioned, are there any memorable moments that have come out of sharing stages with these performers that stick out in your mind?
I mean, I have opened up for like John Michael Montgomery and Cody Johnson and Tyler Rich and so many different incredible names. But honestly, my favorite one was when Kelly invited me out to sing with her in Vegas. I mean, I was already like, for me, because I looked up to her for so long, and then I got to meet her and she was just even more incredible in person. It was so cool to see that's like my mentor and like my inspiration is like my friend. And then when she invited me out to Vegas, it happened to be my 17th birthday. And so she brought me out like a cake and sang me happy birthday on stage. And I sang her song with her. And so that was definitely one of my most memorable performances. And I like have always made a joke every year around that time of my birthday. I'm like, all right, Dad, hey, this was my 17th. So what are we doing next year?
Exactly.
We got a topic. We got a topic.
Right. So. Yes. Yes. It's got to be better. Yeah. Bigger, better. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting. You talked about, you know, it's kind of a surreal thing for you to be asked by Kelly to play a show with her, multiple shows. And I've had guests on the show that have looked up to artists over time, and then they find themselves actually playing with those artists somewhere down the road. And one that I could think of was Michael Sweet, the lead singer for a Christian rock band called Striper, right? That was really big in the 80s. And after Brad Delp had passed from the rock band Boston, Michael became the lead singer for Boston for 6 years. And, you know, I think this is this surreal thing that you grow up, you're listening to these people, maybe you're idolizing them, maybe that's a strong word, but you think they're really cool. And next thing you know, you're performing with them. That's got to be a really surreal feeling. Like, wait, let me pinch myself. Am I really on stage with this person right now?
Oh, yeah. It is the coolest feeling ever. I don't know. I felt like the entire time I just like had goosebumps. Like, I have also never been starstruck. Actually, that's a lie. One other time. But
it was when you got onto this podcast and you saw me, right?
Exactly. You read my mind.
I know I have that ability. Carry on. I'm kidding. Carry on.
But I mean, I've never been starstruck, and even like my mom, like I noticed it, because I felt like every time I was talking to Kelly, I was just like jaw was to the floor, catching flies. My mom
gasping.
I was like, yeah, my mom was like, Presley, like, are you okay? Like, are you good? Like, I need to take you to the doctors or something like that? I was like, I'm fine.
How funny!
Like, I just want to be around her.
That's hilarious.
It was that feeling like that every single
time.
It never got any easier. And I was like, you're just so cool. I want to be your best friend, that type of thing.
Yeah. But and it's funny, you know, we hold those artists at this, on this level. Like, we think that they're untouchables. And then we get around them. And I've had everywhere from, so tomorrow will be my 44th episode that I've dropped. And it really started out for local artists. Like, I would interview local artists, and I've had some big names on the show. I've had, you know, 4-time Hall of Famer from the Statler Brothers on my show. And it's so interesting that you would think that you would be starstruck by that, but these are just normal people that sit and talk to you like you and I are talking like we've known each other all of our lives. And it was the same way with them. And I guess there are some people that will be, you know, starstruck and they can't, you know, get past that. But at the end of the day, all these people are just like you and I and everybody else. They're normal people that have a talent. We all have a talent of some kind, right? And theirs just happens to be a little more public than most. So that's cool that you've had these experiences so far. So earlier in the year, you mentioned that you had played a show called Boots in the Park with Blake Shelton. Tell the listeners again where the show was held and what was the experience with Blake specifically?
I mean, so it was at San Diego Waterfront Park. So it was like the weirdest but coolest venue I've ever seen. It was so narrow and so long. So like you get to see like the USS Midway right on the water right there, which was really cool. Cause I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like I'm performing and I get a view, like, this is nice. Mm-hmm. Normally I just see like people in the crowd and they like are, I don't know how they're even standing up half the time.
Right.
I'm pretty sure they want to fall. But so I was like, well, I get the ocean, I get all the boats. And it was just so cool to see that many people come together to really listen to some really great music and great people. Blake's set was insane, obviously, as you can always imagine. He brought out Gwen, so I was like, oh my God.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, so I was like, that's so cool. But yeah, it was just a fun time overall and such a fun day.
It sounds like a great experience. And, you know, speaking of playing live music and whatnot, I wanted to talk a little bit about your music. Now, back in, I think it was 2001, you had released quite a few singles. During that same year, was Gamble on You this year or was it in 2021? It was this year, wasn't it? Okay. Okay. So you released somewhere around 5 in 2021. Then you had a recent one called Gamble on You. As far as EPs go, are there any EPs out for you right now, or are they all singles right now?
So I am working on one right now. Okay. I can't say much about it.
That's fine.
But in the meantime, I am releasing a bunch of singles, just okay. Kind of getting all of the music that I have prepared out there. I'm writing a lot. I mean, I write all the time. I probably have, I think, like 100 just written songs that I will probably like never see the light of day. Cause I'm right. Like, I don't like that. Not me. No, don't like that.
Exactly.
But, I feel like just because I'm such like everyone's their worst critic. And so I love when I get to work with people and really be able to hear what they have to say on all these songs. And so I'm really fine tuning every little piece so I can make sure my like collection of songs that I want to put out there is just exactly the way I want.
Absolutely. I guess when you do it, you might as well do it right. You want to be happy with the finished product and you want it to be polished too. I wanted to treat the listeners to a short clip of Gamble on You, which there's also a video out on YouTube. I think if the listeners will just go and YouTube search Presley Tennant Gamble on You, they'll find the video. But I'll share the clip and we'll come back and chat about the song a little bit. Fair enough?
Sounds good.
Awesome.
Down the lights, I got a seat to my left and it's yours tonight. Losing track of time, cause I can't seem to get you off my mind. Show me your lead, this ain't a game of luck we both can see. My love ain't free, so how much you wanna bet on me? Don't be a joker or play me for a fool. Come on baby, show me your next move. I'll be the queen to your king since you asked me to. But don't fall now, cause I'm taking a gamble on you.
Great song.
Thank you.
Love that. Now that doesn't take on a country life to me. That sounds more pop to me. Would you agree with kind of the boxing it into a genre somewhere?
Yes, it is definitely not your typical country song whatsoever. Definitely has some more influences, but I feel like that's just the beauty about music. It has no limitations.
Absolutely.
Really. to really express yourself. I feel like myself as an artist, I have such a large like identity in it. And so I love that I'm able to create what I love and get to put it out and have people really respect it.
Yep. And I've had so many people on the show that can't stand to be, even though they are in a genre. I mean, we all have to be, in a genre to, it helps people to determine kind of what they're listening to. But most artists don't want to be put in that box. Like they, you know, this buddy of mine that did the show is kind of a honky tonk rockabilly kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But even though his music screams that Bakersfield sound, like he doesn't want to be, you know, people to think of him as a honky tonk rockabilly guy. Like he's whatever people want to be. I don't even know how to say it, but they don't like the parameters. They don't like the box. And when you're a dynamic singer like you, you can go outside that box so easy. You can make it country. You can do pop, you can do rock and roll. So why be in a box, right? Yep. Exactly. Now, is the song Gamble on You, is this a song that you wrote, a song that you co-wrote? Talk to the listeners a little bit about the writing of the song.
So this is a song I wrote. I was in Nashville. I was tracking in the next couple of days for a couple of new songs. And so I like was looking through my four songs that I picked out and I wasn't super in love with one of them. And I was like, I feel like I could write something a little bit better or something that I feel like I can identify to right then and there in that period of time. And so, you know, I was like in the hotel room, scrolling through like the TV channels, playing around with my guitar. And I ended up on like the poker channel. So I just put it left there and I didn't think anything of it. And then, you know, I was texting this guy I really liked and I was like, I don't know how he feels. I'm taking a risk because I'm telling him how much I like him and I don't know if he's going to feel the same way. So I sent basically like all this stuff and I was talking to him and I really enjoyed hanging out with him. And I looked back up the TV and the poker channel was on and I was like, oh my God, light bulb. And it was like, love is like a gamble. You are taking a risk and you can put everything that you have into it. But you don't know if you're going to win big or if you're going to lose it all. Mm-hmm. And I really was wishing that I was going to win big because I didn't want my heart to be ripped out and like stomped on the floor and be like, hey, 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 like that type of thing.
So, you have pride, right? You don't want to. Yeah.
But I was like, hey, at least I gave it my all. But it actually ended up working out. The person I wrote the song about, I'm still with him.
So awesome.
I won big. And so, you know, Gamble on You, I feel like to me was just about taking risks.
Yeah.
Figuring out like as long as you like put your all into it, you can't regret the chances that you didn't take.
Absolutely. And isn't it interesting how you can have something like the poker channel up, like I don't even know if you're a poker fan or not. Maybe it was just a channel you stumbled across in it and you just didn't feel like changing the channel. I don't know, but isn't it funny how the song, it just comes out of nowhere and the inspiration can always hit at the oddest of times and for the oddest of reasons too.
Oh yeah. I mean, I remember when I was writing the song, I've never played any sort of gambling game. Like I've never gambled.
Okay.
Never played blackjack. And so I like turned to my mom and I was like, hey mom, do you know what some like poker or like gambling references are? And she was like, okay, let's look through them. And so we like sat down and I think I have like a list of like 20 different types of like words and phrases that like somehow fit within gambling. I'm okay. Like, all right, come on guys, let's do this. No, but it worked out. And so I'm very, very proud of how it turned out.
It's always cool. I probably sound like, not to you, but to maybe somebody that listens to my show all the time, a little bit like a broken record. But I always say that there was two reasons that I ever started this podcast. Was the first reason was to learn more about the stories behind the songs that I enjoy, because I am a connoisseur like a sponge for music. I've always been that person, read the liner notes in the album, like I'm just a junkie like that. So I hear a song like Gamble on You that I fall in love with, that I like, I want to know more about the song. So that was one reason I started the podcast. The other part was to expose people like you that to another set of listeners that maybe have never heard of Presley Tennant. So as a musician myself, it's kind of my way of reciprocating or giving back to my peers like yourself. So I love the story behind the song. And I was curious if you, for the five singles in 2021 and Gamble on You, were they all recorded in the same place or do you go somewhere different to record all of these? Talk to me a little bit about that.
I think those songs were recorded in three different places. And so I think my first one that I ever released was Temporary, and that was recorded by Kent Wells. And that was, I remember we recorded it, I think it was at Dark Horse in Franklin, the coolest recording place I've ever been to. It really? Is like a cabin in the middle of like, I don't know if it's like the woods or the forest or if they're the same thing, but it was just so green there, but so hot in the damn building. Oh my God, really? I was sweating, but I was like, well, at least it's keeping the vocals nice and warm. It was,
wow.
Yeah, but it was just so cool to be there. And then the others were recorded, I think, Bite the Bullet. And I'm trying to think of what other songs. I think it was Half That Strong was recorded with Buddy Hyatt and Chuck Rhodes down at Hilltop Recordings. And they are phenomenal people. I loved how the songs turned out. And I feel like just the way that, even the way of how the music was just, I felt like they knew exactly what I wanted to get from it. Yeah. Which I thought was really cool. And then my last couple more recent songs was recorded at Black River, or the soundstage at Black River, and then with Jeff Heskins. And so I love how those songs turned out too. And I don't know, I feel like with each and every place that I recorded at, with each and every different person, I feel like there's just a new take on it, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, that's cool to hear that story about being in a studio like, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. I had a guest on my show that has written number one songs for Keith Whitley and George Strait and Reba and a bunch out of Nashville. He's out of Louisiana, and he was a session musician for a while at a place in Bogalusa, and it was called Studio in the Country, and it was literally a small recording studio in the middle of nowhere, Louisiana. And big bands like Kansas and Paul McCartney and Wings and, you know, a lot of these guys came there because it was a way for them to get away from hustle and bustle and just focus on what they were there to do. Yeah. So there's a lot to be said for these little gems off the beaten path. It doesn't have to be an Abbey Road, or it doesn't have to be, you know, Electric Lady Studios, like that everybody, you know, wants to get in there and record, because some of the greatest have, some of the best are just the little ones that are tucked away that do a great job for sure. Would you say that songwriting comes easy for you, or is this something that Presley really has to sit down and work at?
I feel like it just depends on the song. Typically, I would say it comes fairly easy if I know exactly what I want to write about. But it's hard when it's like, I feel like I am out of ideas or I'm lacking inspiration. Because I feel like for me, a lot of times I hear something that someone has said and I'm like, oh, that could be a cool lyric. And so I go home and I'll just like write it down when I hear it right then and there. And I'll go home and I'll be like, okay, how can I work this into something? What do I want to say with this? And then I'm able to get a full song. But then it's like when I feel like I'm just writing, just because I'm like, oh, I should probably write a song today. That's when like nothing comes out of it. Because I'm like, I'm literally trying to force something that's, and it's not natural. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But typically when I go in and like know exactly what I want to say, it comes fairly easy.
I think that a lot of people kind of just let it happen organically. But there are some that I've had on my show and I ask them that question and they literally set aside time on their calendar during the day to sit down and force themselves to write. And maybe they don't write a song, but they come up with ideas and keywords and things of that nature. Right.
Yeah. But I will say that whenever it's organically, it always is like the most inconvenient times where I like have to leave in like 30 minutes. And I'm like, you write a song right now.
Right. Exactly.
Don't even talk to me.
Right. Or you're somewhere, you have no paper, no pen, nothing. Yeah. It's like, and then it's a fleeting thought and you can't remember. Oh my God. I knew I wouldn't forget that, but I can't remember what I was thinking earlier today. Wait.
It's like 3 in the morning and I'm like just sitting in bed. I'm like, I can't sleep. so I might as well write a song. And I'm up till like 6 in the morning, and then I wake up. I try to wake up by like 9, which is like 3 hours, and I'm like a zombie the next day. I'm like, I do this to myself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't do anything at 3 o'clock in the morning. The songwriting would just have to wait until the next day. But
there's some really interesting choices in there when it's at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Sure.
And you look back the next morning and you're like, what the hell is this?
What was I thinking, or what was I dreaming even, right? Yeah. What age was it that do you remember writing your first full song that you would call a song? Do you remember what age you were?
So, I mean, I always started writing like little things when I was fairly young. Like I would journal everything. So it's like, I like do your diary, like that kind of stuff. I've always done that, but I never thought about turning it into a song up until I would want to say I was 13 or 14.
Okay.
And then I think I wrote a song called like, Don't Take the Summer Yet, because I didn't want to go back to school.
Okay.
And I was like, don't take the summer yet. It was like, it was so, it was, I look back at it now and I'm like, what?
It was corny.
Like, what else is a 14 or a 13-year-old supposed to write about? Like, can't write about a break.
Right.
Like, you better write off your life experiences. I could write about how my dog was barking at a random bird or like a cat in the tree. That's what I could write about.
Right.
That or not going back to school. I was like, I'm seeing back to school posters. I don't want to look at them. I don't want to be there mentally. But I would say my first song that I wrote by myself completely is a song that I wrote called The Woods. And I remember I wrote it on Christmas Day because I just gotten like a little keyboard piano thing. And I just kind of like had this idea of like almost kind of like my story of figuring out where I was in life. And I felt like, I don't know, I didn't want to go down a wrong path. So I was just on my own. And it's like basically about like the story of Little Red Riding Hood and how I could relate to her and how there's going to be bad influences everywhere, and it's just whether or not you stick to what you know or if you decide to stray away and go down those paths. And so I felt like that was the first song that really like meant something to me. So I know it's probably out there somewhere. I think it's still out, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah,
I recorded and released that one, so I was like, oh, this is so cool. I felt very proud of myself, except I sent it to my producer and he was like, girl, what is this musical theater song? Like, I have no idea. This is why I texted you in.
Exactly. If you were not singing, what would you do for a living?
Well, if I'm still in the music industry, but I'm not singing, I would just be a songwriter. Could do that. I would love that. But if for some reason music was not in the picture whatsoever, I would be a real estate agent with my dad.
Really? So that's what he does for a living, huh?
Yes. He has his own brokerage and office. And so I have one more test like through the state, and then I'm a licensed realtor.
Awesome. So. Cool. Well, yeah. do you have time to dabble in that now or not really?
Not really. I think it was just a thing for me to say like, oh, I did it. And I only did it one time in my life. And so, and I wasn't going to school. And during COVID, I was like, I might as well just do something with my time, start something up just to keep myself busy and learning and educating myself since I'm not in college, but, in other ways that I can help further myself.
Yeah. So. Well, it's a great field. My oldest son just had their first baby 5 months ago, my first grandbaby. And he's a licensed realtor and works with a national company and has kind of done that since high school. He just kind of, for whatever reason, gravitated towards it and put himself through the schools and has become successful at it. So I have real estate in the family too. I've never done it. I'm in sales for a living, but I don't sell real estate. Great, great field. And it's always good to have that default, something to fall back on too. You know, if music doesn't work or you get to the age where you just kind of get burnt out, and that can be with construction, that can be with anything. It's not just a music thing, but we always need an alternative to fall back on for sure. Yeah. Yep. What can you share with the listeners regarding a tour, shows? I know that you mentioned earlier you couldn't talk too much about a new release, but anything that you can share that maybe we haven't touched on as it relates to your music, your touring, your shows?
So there is a lot of upcoming shows happening very soon. I, again, can't say too much about the details yet. We're still finalizing everything, but it should be coming out very soon. And that'll all be on my social media. So if anyone wants to stay updated, they can find it all there soon.
Awesome. And then where, speaking of social media, where can the listeners find Presley Tennant on the internet?
You can find me on all my social media, which is at Presley Tennant. So PresleyTennant. The only one that's different, I think, is Facebook, and that's Presley Tennant Official. We were just talking about this earlier.
Yes. I hate that.
Presley Tennant was taken, so I had to go with the next best thing. Or you could just go to my website, which is PresleyTennant.com, and has everything linked there.
Yeah, and I'm always like that, too. I can't remember the socials half the time, and I always say, you can find me at RandyHolsey.com. Or backstagepassradio.com. It's just the easiest. And then, you know, from there, I'm not really that hard to find. Much like you, if somebody goes and Googles Presley Tennant, they'll find you one way or another. Yeah, so I don't know. You know, I'll keep an eye out on the website for tours. If you're ever down in the Houston area, I have some guitars that all of my guests on the show, I have them sign it. So if you're ever through Houston, or if I'm ever out in California, I'll trap you and make you sign a guitar for me.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And so, Presley, thanks so much for being gracious with your time. And I'm glad this interview worked out. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. As always, I ask the listeners to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. And I also ask that you follow Presley on all of her socials. And also check out PresleyTennant.com. I'm sure there's merch out there, right, Presley, that people can pick up from PresleyTennant.com, right? Yeah, so make sure you guys follow her on all of her social media outlets. Again, you can follow my show on Facebook at Backstage Radio Podcast, on Instagram at Backstage Pass Radio, Twitter at Backstage Pass PC, and on the website at BackstagePassRadio.com. You guys take care of yourselves and each other, and we'll see you right back here on the next episode of Backstage Pass Radio.
Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Backstage Pass Radio. Make sure to follow Randy on Facebook and Instagram at Randy Halsey Music and on Twitter at R Halsey Music. Also, make sure to like, subscribe, and turn on alerts for upcoming podcasts. If you enjoyed the podcast, make sure to share the link with a friend and tell them Backstage Pass Radio is the best show on the web for everything music. We'll see you next time right here on Backstage Pass Radio.